when it comes to something like Dancing with the Stars. People actually think their vote matters. But a vote in this November's election actually does matter. It could elect people who make our criminal justice system fair, and your student loans easier to afford. And by the way, you wouldn't let your grandparents pick your playlist. Why would you let them pick your representative who's going to determine your future?
And that was our President Barack Obama, who was stoking the vote. He was in Chicago, I think, this afternoon, and attending was John Fritchie, our next guest. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, Karen. Good to be here.
John is a Cook County Commissioner, Chairman of the Information Technology Committee, and since 2010 has represented the 12th District, which consists of most of the north and northwest side of Chicago. Before that, he was a state representative for 14 years, having been elected at the age of 32. He also is an attorney, having graduated from Northwestern University. And he worked as an attorney general for several years. Welcome to the show. I admire all your Facebook posts. You seem like a fun person.
Well, it depends who you ask, I guess.
You've got a fun dog named Smudge. It's funny how we know things about people from Facebook. I feel like I know you.
Yeah, and I just left the rally earlier, and it's funny when people say, hey, you know what? It's good to see you in 3D. I think everybody likes, you know, using Facebook and social media. For me, it's been great because, you know, as an elected official, you know, you really kind of break down the barriers that much more with, you know, not just your friends, but the people who you represent. And yeah, truth be told, the first thing everybody asks me about is how my dog is. So,
and your beautiful daughter. Got a nice dog and a beautiful daughter. So let's just talk a little bit about yours. Before we talk about you, let's talk about the rally. You were at the rally today. Where was the rally, and what was the nature of it?
The rally was down at UIC Pavilion.
Okay.
It was headlined by President Obama, and we had the whole state ticket there and a number of other folks as well. And it really is about the message of getting people out to vote. You know, every election matters. This one matters more than most, if that's possible. There's so much on the line, whatever your ideology is. But there is so much on the line. This country has gotten to a point where, you know, we've entrenched ourselves one way or the other. So this rally was about reminding people what Democrats stand for, what this ticket stands for, the individual candidates, and how important it is to come out and vote if you haven't already. Call your friends, your neighbors, your family, your coworkers. And, you know, I've always maintained, I don't care. I shouldn't say I don't care. However you vote is your choice. But get out there and vote. You know, we've had too many cases where people say my vote doesn't matter or I don't like any of them. Votes matter. And all you need to do is look at what's going on today to see that.
How did President Obama do at the rally? Was he a good speaker, and did he rally people to...
Well, you know, he needs to practice his speaking a little bit. No. he's the hometown hero.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's like a rock star here, I guess.
He really is. It's funny. You know, he and I came into the legislature together in 1996. And just to watch the rise that he had really has been something. But he has a way of connecting with people, whether it is world leaders or whether it is the person on the corner. And he really endears himself to people. And, you know, they feel that. And I think that's an important thing. And that's part of his effectiveness as well. So, you know, yes, he had the crowd right where he wanted them.
John Fritchie, we're going to have to take a break. This is happening very fast. But when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the referendum, about plastic straws, about the mayoral race, the police consent decree, and all those exciting topics. Can you stay with me?
Looking forward to it.
Okay. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. This is the Karen Conti Show. We're going to be taking your legal calls at about 8:20 or so. So get them ready. You're going to be talking to Ben, my producer, 312-981-7200, or you can text them 981-7200 on any legal topic. I'll see if I can steer you in the right direction or give you the best answer that I can. And we're here with John Fritchie, the Cook County Commissioner. How are you doing, John?
Still doing good.
All right. So we got a lot to talk about. There is a referendum on the Chicago ballot. And what's a referendum? Why should people be concerned about these things? How important are referenda?
You know what? A lot of times these referenda, if we're going to be serious, get put on the ballot with very easy questions. You know, do you support, you know, puppies and sunshine? as a way of keeping more controversial questions off of there. And that's what some of these are. But it's also a good way to gauge the public opinion on things. There's also binding referendum. And one that I'm really proud of, candidly, was 2 years ago I put a binding referendum on there about consolidating the county clerk and county recorder's office into one. And it actually passed 2-1, and we consolidated an office and got rid of a Cook County elected office for the first time in 40 years.
And so does that save money, I would imagine, right?
It will save us millions of dollars every year. After the end of 2019, that office will be gone. And it tells you something about government, that the arguments against it were, well, it's only going to save a couple million dollars a year. So is it really worth doing? It was worth doing.
I'd bend over and pick it up.
Right? There you go.
So just to get really basic here, I've heard these ideas that maybe we have this Chicago government and we have the Cook County government, and it's too much government. Is there some overlap, and could there be other consolidation that could maybe streamline government and make it less cumbersome?
Well, there actually is a lot of overlap, and we've tried to streamline that. So shortly after Mayor Emanuel and President Preckwinkle were elected, they put together what was called the Gang of Six, that I was actually privileged to be on. They each appointed three people to look at ways that we can consolidate things. Everything from using our size to buy in bulk, whether it's vehicles, whether it's supplies, whatever it may be, providing better health care if we can do that. So in Chicago, it seems like there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
But you have to remember that Chicago only makes up about half of Cook County. And so we provide a lot of valuable services everywhere, and the vast majority of our budget is public health and public safety. The sheriff's office, the court system, the hospital system, and these are critical things that fall on the county, not the city.
So let's talk about plastic straws, because that to me is the hottest topic in the world. Is that why are we talking about plastic straws? I understand the environment. That's a good thing. Probably we want to keep the environment safe. But I've heard that other things, like people with disabilities, don't like this.
Well, and it's interesting, because like any other controversial issue, there's going to be people on every side of it. We can talk about the sugar tax or whatever.
Exactly.
So are there good environmental reasons for getting rid of them? Of course there are. The one thing I still haven't looked into, you'll remember probably when you were a kid and I was a kid, we always had those kind of hard, kind of papery, cardboard.
Yes, I do remember those.
And now they're starting to go back to those. And so I don't know if those are more expensive to do, if there was another reason. But the plastic straws, especially when you see those stories about, these islands of garbage out in the ocean, we've got to start somewhere. And if it's the straws, it's the straws.
And it's, I've looked at the statistics, 500 million drinking straws per day. And again, that may not be, if you look at all the pieces of garbage out in the world, that may not be a huge percentage, but it is a start. And it's just funny, because I was reading that people with disabilities are really opposed to this, because a lot of people, they're not going to be using straws for certain drinks anymore. And some people with disabilities can't drink unless they have a straw. And when you're drinking something hot, that doesn't always work with a paper straw. So there's always people who are going to have an issue with anything you pass like this. I guess you're used to that.
Well, and very few ideas are a one size fits all. So you got to be careful about how you implement these things. But it's good to get the discussion going. And this is another way to do that.
So let's talk about the mayoral race, and I'm not asking you to pick a candidate that you like, but just big picture. Mayor Emanuel is stepping down. He's not going to run for re-election, and people speculate and talk about why he's not. But is there something that you look at what he did and you think he could have done this better, and he could have presented himself better to the voters? What are some bullet points, perhaps, that you think that he could have done it to be a better mayor?
Well, I'll tell you what, I believe that he did the best job that he could do. And what I mean by that, he had to make a lot of tough decisions. And, I think he's a polarizing figure from a character standpoint. But
his personality, you mean?
His personality. And people, you want somebody that's going to be in charge and take a leadership role, but they also need to be a little more accessible to the public. But when you go and tick down his list of accomplishments, it's a substantive list.
So interesting, and I think maybe his personality got in the way of people recognizing that, and I always thought, and I heard this, that he was a little arrogant, that he seemed to be a little arrogant, whereas you have the Mayor Daley, who was definitely in control, and I felt like he was in control of our city, but he kind of had that humility.
Mayor Daley seemed like a guy from the neighborhood.
Oh, exactly.
And for better or worse, but he seemed like a guy from the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and people could identify with that at least. But at the end of the day, people want somebody who they feel they can trust, but they also want to see the results. In Chicago right now, and I grew up downtown, people have really had it. They've been taxed out, and they feel that they're paying more, they're getting less, schools are on shaky ground, crime is more spread out than it used to be. Obviously, it's concentrated primarily in a couple areas, but you're seeing it more and more. So there's a lot of tough decisions to be made. What we really need to demand from the ever-growing field of candidates here are, what are your ideas? Not just how are you going to attack all of the other people, or this or whatever it may be, but what are your ideas? How are you going to get us on better economic footing? The city's looking at a $1 billion shortfall over the next several years just on pensions. What are we going to do about schools? How are we going to compete in a more global economy from a technology standpoint? How are we going to draw people here and keep them here? So we really need to listen and have ideas. You know, I think that we're going to see a race that probably has, you know, I don't care how many candidates have announced, but I think you'll probably have 9 or 10 candidates on the ballot at the end of the day. And I want the voters to be able to hear what they have to say. And the candidates are going to have to work on breaking through the clutter. There's a lot of voices to listen to.
Right.
It's not just, you know, Mayor Emanuel and, well, Congressman-elect Garcia. You know, when it was Rahm and Chewy, you had two people to square off against each other. When you have 7, 8, 9, 10 people, they're going to be, you know, battling a lot to get the people's attention.
Now, just apropos, I've got a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but you were on the special investigative committee that oversaw proceedings leading to the impeachment of Rod Blagojevich. Rod Blagojevich got a 14-year sentence. You're a lawyer. You understand the system. What do you think of the sentence, and what do you think, and I'm going to ask you some questions about the long-lasting effects of the Blagojevich regime.
There is no question that the sentence was an extremely harsh one, and that it was as much about sending a message as the underlying offenses. That being said, I'm not sure that the former governor did himself any favors by all but taunting the judge and the prosecutors and the entire system. Listen, you know, I'm not the judge there, but I think that it would be safe to say that former Governor Blagojevich probably tacked a few years onto his own sentence just through his demeanor at the whole through the entire episode and a lack of contrition through the entire episode. But there's not a question. You've seen people do things that are arguably far more heinous who have gotten less time.
Absolutely. And we're still waiting for the Trump pardon, because we heard that for a while and now it's kind of died down. So maybe that still will happen. We'll wait and see. As far as, but I always have to ask people who are in the political realm, we see a lot of corruption in Chicago. We have for years and years. It's nothing new. But the question always is, why do we keep seeing it? And why it gets prosecuted? It gets prosecuted harshly. Both sides of the table have been prosecuted. Both sides of the governors, Republican and Democrat. Why do you see that? I mean, you're in politics. You were in the state. You were a state representative for 14 years. And you see people who make these mistakes. Why is it? Do they go into politics having this bent? Or does the power get to people?
I don't know that there's anybody who went to jail for making a mistake. I think there's a certain arrogance that leads up to these things. People tend to get either enamored of the position or they start to feel that they are bulletproof in a figurative sense, and they start to take liberties and take advantage of it. And, you know, it's really, you know, at this point, it's hard to conceive that people still do this because, you know,
right. That's what I mean.
Like, the public doesn't turn a blind eye. Justice doesn't turn a blind eye to these things anymore. And there's really not a whole lot of sympathy here, especially when people are struggling. Not that it's ever a time to be justified, but, you know, how many times do you have to get the message before you say, enough, we have to stop this?
John, we're here with John Fritchie, who's Cook County Commissioner. You've been a Cook County Commissioner. You've been involved in the state legislature, and you ran for the House of Representatives in Congress. So you kind of have dabbled in all of these national, local politics. How do they differ? How does being a politician, being a legislator, and representing these different groups, how does it vary? Which do you like the best?
You know, interesting question, because people used to ask me if I liked being a representative better or a commissioner better. I truly believe that you can actually get more done to affect people's lives in Springfield than in City Hall or in Washington, at least in the short run. Because, you know, down in Springfield, you're dealing with everything from education funding, tax policy, you know, women's reproductive health, responsible gun ownership laws. And so you're having an immediate effect from a budgeting standpoint, whatever it may be. In Washington, it's a longer term view and it's a longer term gain before you can get something done as an individual legislator. Now, I finished second in a 13-person field to Mike Quigley, and I've got to tell you what, Congressman Quigley does a fantastic job for two reasons. He's in the center of everything that's going on in D.C. right now through his position on the Intelligence Committee. Yet you will find him out in his district on a regular basis visiting local businesses, local schools, et cetera. But it's when you're talking about things that people notice on a daily basis. Like I said, I think it's Springfield. But you know, if you go in your neighborhood or most neighborhoods, more people will know who their alderman is than right. their state legislators, because if there's an issue with a pothole or something else, or they're upset about the plastic bag tax, you know, and their alderman is kind of within arm's reach. So, you know, it is different, but at the end of the day, you know, it's about answering to your constituents, you know, but smaller, right? So at a ward, you got 50,000 people. When I was a state rep, that's 100,000 people. County commissioner, it's 300,000 people. Congressional districts, you know, twice that size. So, you know, it's a more intimate feel, you know, the more local you are. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, recognizing what your constituents want. And you really are the eyes, ears, and voice for them.
Now, you chose politics in the political realm to focus your law degree to some extent. You worked at the Attorney General's office doing consumer stuff, and you have done a lot of consumer things as a legislator and as a commissioner. What is it that you like about being a commissioner, about being in politics, and what's the best thing and what's the worst thing?
Candidly, the best thing would be the amount of things that I've learned. Whether it was agriculture issues, technology issues, whatever it may be. I've met people from around the country, from around the world. I've sat with presidents and been exposed to things and had a chance to really make a difference. Now, you know, my 22-year career is coming to an end in a month, for the time being at least. But when I look back, when I started my job, my daughter was a month old. And I said, I want to do this job in a way that's going to make her proud. She was with me at the rally today. The president stopped on his way out to say hi to the two of us. And when I look back at a legacy, is not really the right word, but the laws that I've changed and the people who I've impacted, hopefully in a positive way, who I've never met. That's a really blessed opportunity to have. As far as the downside, you know, there's not everybody feels that way when you're when they're elected officials. And so you do see some people phone it in, and that's upsetting because it really sours the public's view on elected officials. And, you know, there's a lot of folks that don't think of us much better than, you know, the cable guy or a car salesman. And I'm probably giving them a bad name now. But, you know, that's what it comes down to. But it's really the ability to affect people's lives. You know, I always thought of myself from the beginning till the end of my career as the kid that didn't belong.
Why was that?
My mom is a Moroccan immigrant. We lived briefly in a trailer park. I went through high school, college, law school on hardship scholarships. And I truly, you know, I ran because I felt I owed something back to my mom, to society, whatever it might be. And I think that's the way it should be. But, you know, traditionally, that's not where you see your elected officials coming from. Now, the good news is you are seeing more people coming from more different walks of lives.
You're seeing a lot of I have a house in Wisconsin. A lot of people are firefighters and policemen. They're running for office. I like that.
And that's what it's supposed to be. When I got to the legislature, I would say that maybe 40% of them were lawyers. Now I think it's less than half of that. And that's a good thing. You want farmers. You want stay-at-home moms. You want people that come out of the business community, whatever it may be, out of labor, to bring those voices. You want a citizen legislature.
Raising money, is that just a terrible part of your job or necessary evil?
God-awful.
Yeah, I would imagine. The amount of money you have to, especially the higher you get, the stats on how much you have to actually bring in every day in order to keep your job.
Well, that's right. And then people decry the system, but that's how it works. We were talking earlier, I have never seen so many state legislative races on Chicago TV as we have this season. The amount of money is staggering, and that's what's really unfortunate. We are now getting the diversity of candidates into the field. We now have to get a diversity of incomes into the field as well. We can't just have millionaires. We can't just have people who are funded by millions from the local parties. We need to level the playing field so people can get their message out. Whether that's public financing, I don't know how we go about doing that, but it's going to be very discouraging to a lot of qualified people if they feel that they can't have a shot at public service unless they have access to unlimited funds.
What do you say to people who say, no one who's any decent person would go into politics? And let me just start by saying, I was from Berwyn, so I didn't grow up with any money at all and put myself through college and law school. And I always wanted to be a politician because I grew up with the Kennedys as being the people who I looked up to. And I loved Judy Bar Topinka, who was from my neighborhood.
Everybody loved Judy.
You know, she was a common sense person. She was my role model, really. And when I sort of got into law school and I realized the political life just seemed like so horrendous. And even now it's even worse. I don't have thick enough skin for that. I just don't. How do you encourage people to take that step when you know that you're going to be criticized? Just look at the things that you see on the newspapers and the ads. This person denied hearing aids to young children. You know, the most horrible things people are saying.
You should see my last campaign. no, it's true, though. And I think one of the things to incentivize these folks and the good people is other folks are going to run. And if we want to stop people who have a worse message, we need to have people who have a better message. And so, you know, it gets rough and tumble. It is personal. They'll come after you. They'll come after your family. You know, and it's an unfortunate thing. But, you know, it's a sacrifice, and people have to be willing to make that sacrifice. You know, to be candid, you know, I'd have a much easier life, you know, had I stayed in the private sector the whole time than, you know, having spent 20 years in the public sector here. But it was a willing sacrifice. You know, I've never complained about it one time, but people have to understand what it entails. And that it's not all glamour and, you know, press conferences and fun things. You know, there's a lot of rolling up your sleeves. There's a lot of late hours. There's a lot of community meetings. But these are the things that go with the job, and they should go with the job. You know, I have always strayed away from using the term politician and always referred to myself and others as public servants. You know, it's not a semantic issue. That's really what you need to be. You should not run for office because you want to be a politician.
Right.
You should run because you want to be a public servant.
If you were to give advice to a young person or someone maybe not so young who's thinking of entering a race, whether it's a mayoral race or some race, how do you prepare yourself? Like if you started at the beginning, if you were to go back, I mean, you had a very interesting background because you were born in Louisiana and your family was from Central Illinois and you went to Latin school and you went to law school. So you have all these different pieces. How would you prepare someone from age 10 to be a public servant? What are the traits and what are the skill sets?
The kid at age 10 who's able to get away with everything because they can con their parents, there's your next elected official.
No, but I
think what you want to do is talk to people when they're a little older and say, you know, why do you want to run? I've seen people tell me that they want to run for office. I say, why? Well, I think it would be great to know. I mean, no, what are you going to bring? Why do you want to run for office? What do you stand for? If you can't articulate why you want to run and what you want to do, you know, that should just be the end of the equation right there. You also need to be involved in your community. Understand the neighborhoods and the people who you want to represent, what they need, what their interests are, what they're about, and whether you feel that you can be a good advocate for them. But you really have to have passion more than anything else. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be more of the same old thing.
And not to get super political, I know you're not a huge Trump fan. No one, you know, you just need to look at your Facebook page to realize that. But let's just say, just without criticizing or do anything, how is the Donald Trump presidency, do you think, how is it going to change politics in the future? Is it going to have a lasting impact? Or at some point when he gets voted out of office or he serves his eighth year and goes back to reality television, or how is this going to permanently impact the United States?
Well, unsurprisingly, it's a great question. It's a two-part question, though. One is how it's going to affect politics. One is how it's going to affect our country. We are at a dangerous, disgusting, divisive, scary time right now. I have never seen the level of hate. I saw it during my campaign. You see it on a daily basis when you see what happened in Pennsylvania. You know, these are unprecedented times. It does look like you're looking at newsreels from the 40s again. And this is a scary thing. So that's the impact he's made. And hopefully we'll heal. It'll take time. How he's impacted politics, though, is he has gotten people to the point where, based on their hate or based on their ideology, they're willing to throw facts to the wind. You know, he can say that he is all in favor of protecting pre-existing conditions for health coverage, yet all he does is try to undo these. He'll tell you that the sun rises in the west, and people want to believe that. Those are dangerous things. That's a change in politics that has to come back. If we don't fix that, we don't fix the country. If we don't fix the country, we're really at a precipice.
John Fritchie, thank you so much for joining me. Will you come and do this again?
Karen, I'd love to come back.
That's great. I love that. We have to think of a name of the segment, like something with Fritchie that rhymes with, no, we're not going to go there. Not going to go there. Take care.